Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
I need somebody help, not just anybody help. You know I need someone help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find the change of mind, I'll open up the doors.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio, this 22nd day of March, 2024. Today, we're going to take an excursion into cosmology with Joels and my featured guest today will join us at the bottom of the hour. In the meanwhile, here's some updates on what's taking place around the world. NATO seems to be playing games with Russia. I even have reports that NATO is marshaling forces that they're going to attempt to take on Russia and Ukraine. There are other reports that Russia has allowed NATO troops into Ukraine. Just bear in mind, if that were true, that Russia is a master of conducting conventional warfare. They had even drawing the powerful German army into Russia only to be severely damaged, virtually destroyed, in part by the Russian winter. But they're experts at entrapment, in drawing a force into a situation where it's going to be subject to annihilation. So I begin with an interview with Scott Bennett, my dear friend and colleague, former Army Intel and PsyOps officer on RT. Let's see what Scott has to say.
Well, let's discuss developments now with U.S. Army veteran and commentator Scott Bennett. Scott, you're most welcome. You have these Polish warning stroke threats, along with France reportedly planning to send troops to Ukraine, along with other countries mentioning NATO involvement too. Do you see a coordination in this escalation? It all seems to be coming at once.
Yeah.
We have the UN adding a draft resolution for immediate ceasefire tied to the release of hostages, Blinken has said. This is quite bizarre. I believe what happened here is that the politics have become so outrageous in the United States that nobody is supporting the Democrats in relation to their foreign policy, that this is one of the rare situations where foreign policy is making a huge difference in a national election. So they're trying to back up the U.S. The U.S. has submitted a draft resolution to the Security Council calling for an immediate ceasefire tied to the release of hostages, Secretary of State Antony Blinken told the Saudi news outlet Al Haddad on Wednesday. Well, in fact, we actually have a resolution we put forward right now. It's before the UN National Security Council that does call for an immediate ceasefire tied to the release of hostages. We hope very much the countries will support that, he said in an exchange with Al-Hadeth's Christine Bassery. I think that would send a strong message, a strong signal. Meanwhile, we have video of Israel using drones to slaughter civilians. Catch this out.
الترويع هو إحدى استراتيجيات قوات الاحتلال في حربها على غزة. ترويع الفلسطينيين وترويع من يشاهد مقتلة الفلسطينيين. بداية فبراير الماضي، 4 شبان يسرعون الخطى في البحث عن منازلهم إن بقيت. هنا منطقة السكة في خان يونس بجنوب قطاع غزة التي شهدت قصفا إسرائيليا وعمليات عسكرية منذ بدء التوغل في المحافظة الجنوبية أوائل ديسمبر الماضي. تظهر الصور التي حصلت عليها
Four planes and bombs taking them out. It's grotesque. Israeli armored vehicles, they've withdrawn from the area so they won't be hit or damaged. But you just have these young men walking along this roadway. There they go. Beaming hate. Wow. Gross. Disgusting. Meanwhile, the CENTCOM chief has warned of a growing Iran-China-Russia pact. I find this all rather ironic because when I visited Buenos Aires in 2007 and 2008, I was invited to speak to address a mosque, and I spoke to the imam, talking to him then. This is like 2007. About the necessity for Iran to develop a mutual defense pact with both Russia and China. I'm very pleased to see it happening today. U.S. Central Command General Michael Carilla told Congress Thursday he's very concerned about the burgeoning alliance between Iran, China, and Russia and the global implications of the bloc. Carilla made a comment during a House Armed Service Committee hearing detailing the national security challenges in the Middle East and Africa. Collectively, Iran, Russia, and China are strengthening their relationships and fostering a chaotic landscape favorable to their exploitation. The ramification of this partnership will have global implications. Indeed, it is an awesome, powerful combination. His comments came 2 weeks after telling the Senate Armed Services Committee that Iran, Russia, and China are strengthening the relationship. It's a theme he touched again on the House, in the House. What we see is Iran relying on China and Russia. Iran sells 90% of its oil, all U.S. sanctioned to China. In effect, China's funding Iran's subversive and malign behavior in the region. Iran went from hundreds to now thousands of one-way attack unmanned aerial systems, suicide drones that they are providing to Russia. They're providing both complete systems and built a factory for Russia to produce them for themselves. Gross said what Russia can provide to Iran is concerning, though he wouldn't elaborate. Last week, a group of 7 warned Iran against transferring ballistic missiles to Russia to use against Ukraine, saying we're prepared to respond swiftly in a coordinated manner, including with new and significant measures against Iran. Well, why the hell doesn't, when NATO is transferring all its weapons to Russia, they ought to be subject to a similar response by Russia. This is all pretty outrageous, if you ask me. John, your thoughts.
Excuse me, I was just clearing my throat here. I follow along with what's been going on, and to me it's just a big distraction because the administration wants you to look somewhere else. Doesn't matter what it is. It's a war by proxy. They're going to keep doing it and keep doing it because they're lying about everything that's going on in the world. You know, and if we get into this stuff about off-world and off-planet stuff, it's exactly that stuff. So they're going to put a war in the Ukraine. They're going to put billions and trillions of dollars there. Then they're going to go to the Gaza Strip. They're going to put it over there. Now we got Haitians in Haiti And I've been dealing with patients here for the past year or so that are in San Diego because they come here on fast track. So it all ties in with look over there, distraction over here, just like back at JFK, Dealey Plaza. Look at the grassy knoll thing. You know, all these other things. It's all a distraction, and nobody seems to be getting it. And they're going to keep stealing taxpayers' money.
John, what's it supposed to be a distraction from?
The actual shooters, the actual stuff that's going on with the planet.
No, I'm not talking about Dealey Plaza, John.
Oh, the planet. Let's get into alien technology and stuff.
No, I don't want to get into alien technology just yet. We're going to have the rest of the show for that, John. So if you don't have more on this, Joe, your thoughts about what's going on, the pact between Iran, Russia, China, obvious in my opinion, and devastating to the West. Your thoughts.
Yes, well, Iran just released information on their three-stage intercontinental ballistic missiles, which are hypersonic. Russia's building an air base on the Golan Heights border so that they'll be able to easily attack Israel, and they'll also be able to set up any air defenses so that Israel won't be able to just attack constantly Syria. Syria, we stage set that with CIA Operation Timber Sycamore, which brought the weapons from Libya after we used CIA Operation Zero Footprint to overthrow the governments of Tunisia, Yemen, Egypt, and Libya. So bottom line is we've been meddling in the Middle East for a century, but certainly since 9/11 at the beck and call of Israel to knock out all of their enemies, which is why we had to attack Afghanistan and Iraq in order to book in both sides of Iran so we could attack them from both sides, which thankfully didn't happen. It's disgusting that we've let this group manipulate the entire planet into all of these cataclysmic warp issues.
Thank you. Good job. Meanwhile, with showing unwavering solidarity, notwithstanding genocide is taking place in Gaza, the United States contemplates inviting Netanyahu to address Congress. I find this repulsive. U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson has revealed the Republican caucus is contemplating an invitation for Israeli BM Netanyahu to address Congress. This potential invitation is a strong testament to the unwavering support for Israel from the Republican side, especially during the challenging times Israel faces in its ongoing conflict with Hamas. This is clearly written by a Zionist proponent. Speaker Johnson's initiative reflects a commitment reinforcing the ties that bind the U.S. and Israel, highlighting the importance of staying with Israel as it navigates through one of its most critical periods. Yes, yes, yes. Extinguishing the Palestinian community, slaughtering them in place, using drones, artillery, planes, bombs, all provided by the United States. This is just disgusting beyond words. John, your thoughts about the idea of inviting Netanyahu to address the Congress?
Well, a lot of those things are bothering me, and I've studied this stuff for years, and I used to protect the embassies in Washington, the Israeli embassy, the Russian embassy, and all that, so I've got context myself. I've been monitoring this stuff, and you know, the thing with Syria is just another thing. If you want to get religious about Gog, Magog, Megiddo and all that, they're all lining up. They're trying to get the 10 nations together, and eventually they're going to have a war that's going to end up in Israel, which is what they don't want to do because of the implications of us supporting Israel. And in fact, Trump was the only president, this is kind of amazing on his part, he was the only president to put the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem, which is the capital area where they're supposed to have it. You don't put the U.S. embassy off in another area away from that area, a zone, because it gets attacked.
But, John, remember, Jerusalem is supposed to be an international city. It was not supposed to be the capital. Tel Aviv is the capital of Israel.
What he was doing was
making a major move benefiting the Zionist enclave in Israel. I think it was reprehensible myself. Just as him declaring the Golan Heights to be a part of Israel was equally reprehensible, just as was taking American funding away from the refugee organization assisting the Palestinians. I think in relation to Israel, Trump has a lopsided view, and it causes me acute distress, as it does many of his other erstwhile supporters.
What makes you think that he doesn't have dual citizenship, by the way?
Oh, you think that Trump himself?
Yes, think about it. Kushner is his son-in-law, and Chertoff and Tom Ridge and all these other guys from Department of Homeland Security for years, if you look them up on Wikipedia, just say dual citizenship for some of these guys, heads of state and high-ranking people since the 90s at least, and I'm aware of it, and that means they owe allegiance to two different countries, which you can't do if you get a sworn oath.
Well, you may or may not know, John, but my very first political speech was at a Ron Paul Freedom Rally on 15 April 2008 on the grass outside the Capitol, where I gave a speech that was subsequently published under the title 9/11 and the Neocon Agenda, the central point of which you should never put dual citizens in decision-making or policy-shaping positions in government because you cannot know that their loyalty to the other state does not outweigh their loyalty to the United States. So if Trump himself is a dual citizen, are you telling me he is? That distresses me acutely.
Well, that's the rumor that goes around that's what they've got. And by doing that, it's no different than claiming maritime law stuff out of England. And if they get a dual citizenship, well, where's the loyalty? They don't care about loyalty anymore. They don't care about their oaths of office anymore. But I think you hit it right on the point. I didn't know that. That's really good of you.
John, let me give Joe a shot to add on to this. Your thoughts.
Mike Johnson is an absolute 100% righto disappointment. They're getting ready to pass a $1.5 trillion deficit spending bill. And he said when he was elected speaker that he was going to release the January 6th tapes with 40,000 hours of tapes. And he's released almost none of them. And that was why he replaced the previous clown that was there from California. So, but bottom line is the Israelis have already said they've located three perfect red heifers that once they sacrifice them and burn them, that they're going to be able to sprinkle the ashes around the Temple Mount and destroy it and build the third temple. And then their Messiah is going to come. So that's what this whole thing's all being built around.
I'm familiar with that, too. I thought it was four red heifers, but either way, they brought them back there, and they supposedly mixed them and in vitro fertilization with one of their own over in Israel is what I understood as well.
Well, it's all pretty damn disturbing stuff. Meanwhile, here's another report, very equally troubling. Biden's communist SCOTUS pick reveals how Democrats really America's constantly protected free speech rights. Biden appointed Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said the quiet part out loud about the Democrat plan for free speech in America, and it's as bad as you think. The nation's highest court has been tasked with hearing one of the biggest free speech cases in her lifetime, and Jackson, being a far-left communist, she's made clear she's no fan of that pesky First Amendment. Justice Jackson complained the First Amendment, quote, hamstrings the government in significant ways. That's, of course, the point, especially according to her, in the most important time periods. How this woman could be appointed to the court under these conditions is beyond me. Jackson, like the Democrats she speaks for, is apparently frustrated that the First Amendment protects American citizens from being censored by their own government. Considering the Bill of Rights was quite literally put in place to protect the people from a dangerously powerful federal government, it's particularly telling that Jackson has an issue with the First Amendment, but it gets worse. She went on to say the government has a duty to protect its citizens by censoring them. Some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, claiming that censorship is a form of protection. You seem to be suggesting that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. Jackson continued, while speaking to Louisiana Solicitor General Benjamin Aguina Aga, how the hell would she know what information is harmful? How would she know what information is true? Is Katina Jackson supposed to have privileged access to truth? This is absurd. Can you help me? I'm really worried about that, she continues, because you got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective. And you're saying the government can't interact with the source of those problems? You see her totalitarian heart coming clearer. Jackson, it's and I. We'll be right.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host, with my Friday co-host, John Carman, and my special guest today, Joe Olson. We're going to be getting into issues in cosmology, and John's eager to talk about alien bases that I do not believe exist, but he's going to make his argument. Meanwhile, Jim Jordan bashes Justice Jackson's First Amendment flaw. Republican Representative Jim Jordan, a fiery and passionate defender of free speech, did not hold back in his criticism of Supreme Court of Justice Ketanji Brown's recent comments during a key censorship case. Jordan, hailing from the great state of Ohio, took aim at Justice Jackson's eyebrow-raising statement, suggesting the First Amendment could hinder government action at crucial times. For goodness sake, Jordan exclaimed, the First Amendment is there to limit government overreach, not empower it. It's like Justice Jackson missed the memo on basic constitutional principles. I couldn't agree with him more. This is just absurd. John, your thoughts?
I agree 100%, especially with the Ketanji Jackson joke, because these people in the Supreme Court, they're not doing the jobs that they're supposed to be doing. They don't hear all the cases. I know if people have had their cases brought. I've had a case that went through all the way up through the appeals, and then you try to go to the Supreme Court, and they'll just shelve it. They won't address the serious issues.
Yes. Yes. Joe, give us your thoughts.
Yes, well, she was actually groomed to be a black activist, and she graduated with a degree in government from Harvard, and then she got a Harvard JD, so that's why she's behaving this way. Their great analysis of what they were doing with Glenn Greenwald and Matt Tabahi talking about what mental gerrymandering it takes to be able to rewrite the First Amendment so that the government can come in and impose anything they want. This woman has absolutely zero background in history or in science, and she's incapable of making an informed decision about either one of them and incapable of carrying on an honest debate. So anytime you want to debate me on global warming, green energy, peak oil, Big Bang, or history, I'll be happy to debate you, Justice Brown Jay.
Yeah. I mean, it's just stunning what's going on here. Let's have one more story before we turn to the cosmological issues you want to address, Joe. Meanwhile, Trump promises to release January 6 political hostages on day one. Some would have liked for him to have granted them immunity and pardons right from the start. And New York court orders the New York Attorney General withdrawal letters saying that the $464 million Trump bomb is not impossible. Trump had explained they tried every possible way they couldn't come up with this massive bond in cash they're supposed to have in order to appeal. So Trump has submitted to the appellate court a request that this should be, you know, straightened out. He should be allowed to appeal notwithstanding. So she overreached. It was improper on her part. She overreached and submitted a letter that was inappropriate, saying it wasn't impossible. How the hell she's in a position to make that determination is beyond me. Our legal system has just fallen apart. Tell me your thoughts, John.
I'm not sure if I have a thought on that. I mean, so far, what you said is true. But with all the politics going on, we're still being lied to by these people. That's what the Democrats do. They get in there, tear it apart, and then they fix something and claim that they fixed it. And they'll rewrite all the laws in their own terminology to their way of thinking. And you think, oh, that's a cool law. But they're just rewriting the same laws that they're not enforcing on the books, like all the stuff at the border. You know, 8 U.S.C. 1324, human trafficking. But, you know, get me started on the border, and I'll tell you a ton of information on that, too. So,
Joe.
Yes, well, Jared Kushner bought the 666 Fifth Avenue building for $1.8 billion in 2007, and then we had the 2008 crash. And so at the time that Trump was elected, Jared Kushner had a net worth of minus $500 million. When Trump left office, he had a net worth of $2 billion. So you can talk all you want about Hunter and Burisma. If you can make a $2.5 billion change in your net worth in a four-year period while your father-in-law is in the presidency, you've got a little bit of influence peddling going on. But if you've got $2 billion in assets, why don't you just loan your father-in-law some money so he can get out of the trap that the Democrats have set? Oh, that's right. Because you're a Kabbalist and you don't want to do that. Absolutely disgusting. I could go on forever about Jared, but we'll save that for another day.
That's well said. Well said, Joe.
Let me just toss in, Trump is beating Biden in all of the battleground states. He's contemplating Ramaswamy not for a running mate, but possibly head of Homeland Security, which I think would be a good move. Meanwhile, Joe, you want to talk about issues of cosmology, and John's eager to enter the fray. So let's go there, my friend. Let's start off. Here's your cure for cosmology's peptic ulcer. Go for it, Joe Olson.
Yes. Well, I took astronomy in 1969, and I was taught Big Bang before I actually took any physics classes, and it seemed plausible, but I was definitely not believing it. And then I started taking classes in physics, and the more I studied, the less it made sense to me. So I've been studying astronomy at a college professor's level for over 50 years, and I was writing articles at Canada Free Press, and I'd already written like 30 articles there, and I was bored to tears with writing about global warming, green energy, and peak oil. So I decided, well, just on a lark, I'll write an article about what happens if the universe was not expanding, but that the redshift was due to angular velocity, which also has a Doppler effect and also has a redshift. So to give you an analogy, when a train goes by, you get a compression of the sound waves, which give you a higher octave sound. And then as it passes you, you get the motion of the sound source leaving you, and that gives you a longer wavelength, and that gives you the sound shift of as a train goes by. Well, the same thing happens with the air raid sirens that we had in the 50s, where you have a cone that's sending out the signal, and as it's rotating towards you, it's compressing the sound, and then as it's rotating away from you, it's elongating. So you get the same effect that you have from a train from a rotating source. So I said, well, if the universe was rotating, maybe we wouldn't have expansion, and then you wouldn't have to do all of this gymnastics that's necessary to make cosmology work, which is dark matter, dark energy, and Big Bang. And so I wrote an article at Canada Free Press, yeah, and it's up on the screen, The Cure for Cosmology's Peptic Ulcer, where I explain how the Doppler effect could actually be. And here's the really weird thing, is that we're forced to believe that the Milky Way is the center of the observed universe. We see galaxies over 13 billion light years away in every direction. And we have to believe that Big Bang must have nine dimensions, multiverses, antimatter, dark matter, vacuum energy, which is invisible but far greater than gravity. So in addition to that, we had the philosophy here on Earth for human beings for a long time where the Earth was the center of the universe, and that was called geocentric. And then with Kepler and Galileo, we went to the heliocentric, which is the sun is the center of the universe. And now we're supposed to believe in the galactic centric, where no matter where you look, the universe is 13 billion light years away. And that just means that the Milky Way would have to be the center of the universe, which is completely preposterous on its own regard. So,
Everything the same. Thank you.
Joe, you might want to give a thumbnail sketch about the Big Bang. You know, the idea that all mass and matter and energy were concentrated in a teeny tiny space and then blew up, expanded, then reached a point where gravity caused a contraction and you had the big crunch and everything came back together in this tiny space. And then it repeated over and over. So we could be in one of infinitely many cycles of Big Bang expansion, contraction, big crunch, Big Bang. You're saying from the beginning you were skeptical. I think your points about a rotating universe are fascinating. And I'm extremely pleased as punch to hear it all. John, would you like to comment on this aspect right now or hold your fire for later?
Well, I don't have much. I've got a lot of background stuff I could talk about because I have some background. Not as good as Mr. Olson, though, which I'm quite impressed with. A lot of people don't even do the basics. Like the universe is supposedly, what, 4.5 billion years old, or at least the planet Earth is. And they try to estimate all these things based on all the astrological locations of the planets and the stars and so forth. But it's still like almost incomprehensible at certain levels. It's to understand all this stuff is like crazy, because if you heard some of the alien interviews that they put out, it's not the fact that they had the interviews. It's the fact that the questions that were asked when they explained was so incomprehensible at the human level about what really went on. You know, and it gets into what's God and all these other things. But you ever seen that one where they show the diagram, like you mentioned earlier, that everything allegedly revolved around the Earth and then it's around the sun? There was one exercise where they're showing the sun is going through the universe and the planets are traveling around it in a spiral, which means they don't change, but yet they're traveling through the universe. Well, then all the other stars are not in sync. You see what I mean? So they're putting out all kinds of stuff out there. It's almost like flat earther type stuff, you know. But go ahead.
Joe.
Well, this is a companion to the Darwin theory of spontaneous creation. So you don't need to have a creator if just a certain batch of chemicals can randomly start forming self-replicating life forms. So that's completely absurd. And if you can do the
Joe, I gotta tell you, if you're gonna appeal to a special creator, I gotta take exception to that. You're talking about issues about the origin of life are very complex. But believe me, as an expert in evolution, this is all perfectly feasible. It doesn't require any special creator. And when you start talking about random, you're excluding the fact that you have a whole bunch of different experiments taking place. And the question becomes, if one in a huge number happens to be successful and produced life, then that's explicable. It's not a matter of being unexplainable, okay? I just don't like that kind of, in my opinion, anti-scientific attitude about the origin of life.
Well, I don't like the attitude of spontaneous creation for the
question is what that the question is what does that mean, Joe? But we're getting off the point, right? So go for
yes,
it.
Yes.
Go
switch,
back.
Switch on my camera. I want to quickly show a little screenshot.
Sure.
Can you switch on my video?
Sure.
Now this is, as I was doing this research on this, I found a Time magazine article which was published December 14th, 1936. The title is called Shift on Shift. And it's an interview with Edwin Hubble about his, quote, redshift that he discovered in 1926. And what he says in here is that based on the redshift measurements that he's making at this point, using a 100-inch telescope, the Hooker telescope at Mount Palomar, he's able to see back apparently 3 billion years, like I mentioned previous, in all three axes. So we're still in the center of this, quote, universe. But he can see 3 billion years, and at that point, the edge of the apparent universe is moving at 25,000 miles per second. For reference, the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. But he said if I had a 200-inch telescope, we would have twice the diameter, and you square that to get the area, you'd have four times the amount of area. He said at that point, the 200-inch telescope will be able to see back 13 billion years, and the apparent edge of the universe will be moving in all directions at 100,000 miles per second, which everybody will recognize as impossible. So that's why I wrote my next article, and if we can put that one up on the screen.
Yeah, sure. Give me one second.
Mysterious Dr. X, this universe is not expanding.
Right, Joe, let me pull it up.
And these articles were posted. There's a 10-article series total at Canada Free Press on my Big Bang research. But yeah, we're not going to cover all of them today, so we're just going to hit the highlights.
Go ahead, Joe. There it is. Mysterious Dr. X says universe is not expanding.
Right. And then I used more evidence from his interview in Time magazine in 1936 and the previous mentions that I've made about the physics of Doppler effect from angular velocity. And one of my readers at Canada Free Press sent me an email and said, Olson, somebody's already discussed this. And I went, oh my God, here I've written four articles on how the universe can't possibly be expanding, and here's an alternative. And somebody's already thought of it, and I took astronomy in 1969. I've never heard of a rotational model discussed anywhere. And so, oh, my God, it was discussed previously, and it was dismissed. What have I missed, and how have I embarrassed myself? And he said, you need to check out the Einstein-Gödel metric. And so I pulled up the Einstein-Gödel metric. Kurt Gödel was a mathematician, world-renowned mathematician. A professor at Princeton, lived about two blocks from Einstein, and they were really good friends. They got together once a week and drank wine and talked about physics. And one day he showed up at Einstein's place, and he said, Einstein, I've been looking at your field equations for relativity. And he said, if there was three variables that we had, then we would be able to solve all of your field equations with these three variables with a rotating universe. But the thing is, if you have a rotating universe, then time travel would be axiomatic. And I went, Jesus Christ, no wonder the CIA doesn't want you to know about a rotating universe, because this would be a huge blow if they were able to verify everything in the history of the planet, because you can't go back in time, but you can, I mean, you can't go back in time and change anything, and you can't go forward in time and change anything, but you could potentially go back in time and verify everything. So the variables that he said you needed to have was the background radiation, the BMR signal, the spin of cosmic dust, and then you needed to have enormous amount of computing power. You needed to have some way of time positioning the planet, and then you need to have holographic projection. And all of those technologies were being developed, and by the early 80s, you had GPS in place, you could track, you had the computers to be able to do the massive amount of computation that was necessary, and you had holographic projection that would be able to take you back to a date-time-specific location and see exactly what was going on. And so then I wrote an additional articles that covered that. One of them is called Federally Funded Frankenscience, and the other one is Frankenscience Finale, and then Time Travel Tremors. So we don't really need to go into any more of that because it's getting a little bit esoteric. But bottom line is, you could potentially, if you believe in the Einstein relativity, which is subject to question, but based on the theory from that standpoint, yes, you could go back in time and it would be axiomatic.
Well, let's talk a little bit about relativity, Joe, if you believe in that. Look, the relativity of motion is obvious, right? We know that. If you were on a train and assumed it as your frame of reference and the world is all passing by rapidly, if you're on Earth and you see the train passing by. So, you know, the relativity of motion is a fact. It's very simple. It means all these calculations, too, a before, simultaneous with an after, are relative to frames of reference. Now, I assume you're not telling me you're in denial of the relativity of motion. So let's just begin there, right?
No, and I don't really want to get too far off into relativity because there's a lot of questions about that. And there's people that I would point to that are absolutely better experts on that. One of them is Dr. Pierre-Marie Rotabli, which we're going to be discussing a little bit later. I think I've got a video from him. But the Mount Palomar telescope, which is 200-inch, was opened in 1949, and that's when he was able to look back. And so my other alternatives were, well, if space is curved, possibly the light that we're seeing is not from distant universes, but it's being sent around in this rotational manner. And what we're looking back and seeing is maybe, like we're going to title this program, the Cosmic Hall of Mirrors. Maybe when we see all these distant galaxies, maybe what we're actually seeing is the backside of the galaxies that we can see from the front. So that was one thought. And then I came across a paper by a chemical engineer named Robert Ashworth, and his was The Helical Travel of Light. And this was published in 1996. And in that, he said that actually they couldn't decide whether light was a particle or a wave because it has properties of both. And he said, well, he did waveguide experiments with light, and he was able to prove that light is a particle. that's moving at 1.7 times the speed of light, creating a wave that produces the actual speed of light. So an example would be if you were standing on the shore and a boat came by, the boat is going at a certain speed, it creates a wave, and the wave approaches you on the shore at a slower speed than the boat. And so as the photon's going in a helical travel, it's actually traveling faster than the speed of light, but it's projecting a wave that moves at the speed of light. And so that could possibly cause a red shift as well. And then the curious thing is the nearest galaxy to us is Andromeda. It's two and a half billion light years away, but it's approaching the Milky Way galaxy and projected to collide with us in a billion years, where the two galaxies will just merge into each other. So how do you have an expanding universe where the nearest galaxy to you is moving towards you at a rapid pace? It's absolutely absurd. And so bottom line is, I just have a real problem with Big Bang. And then what's the deal with dark matter?
Well, Joe, let's do this one step at a time, okay? You laid a massive amount of evidence, and you just go on and on. So let me see. John, would you like to comment on what Joe's been saying here before?
Yeah, I sent you a kind of a text message. I said, why not explain quantum physics? Because a lot of this stuff goes over a lot of people's heads. I've studied stuff before. I'm not a rocket scientist joke, but I am familiar with the research and the other stuff about other planets. You know, the universe or the planet Earth is supposed to be, 4.5 billion years old. But I agree with Joe on this thing about the expanding universe thing. It doesn't make sense, because if it's expanding, then you want to take away all the stuff about what we're doing on travel. You know, and I like the comparison about the train and all that, but the aliens don't use that at all. If you looked at Bob Lazar's research, and he was a scientist that actually worked at Area 51, he described in pretty good detail about how they developed these electromagnetic machines or engines that put like a bubble in the front and a bubble in the back, and you travel at a certain speed. You break the barrier, so you're traveling from one point A to point B like a magnet would slap together. That's how fast it would go, and you go interdimensionally. So there's no such thing as traveling for like 2 light years away. They could get there in split seconds. Split seconds. And we're worried about rocket stuff like Elon Musk to go to another planet. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure it does, but Joe, your comments.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the Hall effect, but the Hall effect is that if you have a dual polarity, and you change it at one at the source, it will also change at the receiving end. So bottom line is, if you had a laser that was set up, you could do digital signals instantaneously from one point to another. So instead of having like a 6 or 8 minute lag doing radio communications with Mars, you could actually set up a laser, send the laser to a satellite that's circling Mars, and then as soon as you make a change in polarity, because that's what lasers are, they're polarized light, as soon as you make a change, you have the ability of going 1 and 0, and so you can send digital information, and it's possible that you could actually, and they've actually been transmitting matter through electromagnetics. So yes, that's definitely a possibility, but the possibility is that you could move, number one, instantaneously, and then even if you were moving at the speed of the photon instead of the speed of the generated wave, you'd be 1.7 times the speed of light. So that's where we end up with this, this dichotomy. But this is a subject that really needs to be explained, and I think it'd be explained where most people with a college, minimal amount of college science education could participate in the debate. And this is a debate that we really need to have. And this is a debate that they will not let you have, just the same way they won't let you debate the real physics and climate change.
Well, you're laying it out here, Joe. John, did you have an additional comment here now? Or we're going to be getting into some pretty sticky wickets here in a moment.
Yeah. No, I'm listening very carefully.
You know, and we're on the verge of the break, but go ahead. Reflection.
Yeah, I'm listening very carefully to what you guys are saying, because that's what I do, is I listen and I pull out facts and I try to compare it to other facts that I'm aware of. So that way there's a connection. But it still seems that the science on this planet is still trying to keep us down at the lowest levels, when they've got stuff that's so far beyond, you know, like the alien
technology. Here's a break. We'll be right back with John Carman and Joe Wilson. You don't want to miss this. Right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we have what certainly qualifies as breaking news. Trump says he has $500 million cash as bond deadline looms. This is one he had allocated for the campaign. It's his money. Former President Donald Trump posted on social media on March 22nd, that's today, through hard work, talent, and luck, I currently have over $500 million in cash. This comes as a former president needs to put upwards of $454 million to stay judgment in a civil fraud case while he appeals to effectively hold off the attorney general from potentially seizing his buildings during the appeal. She's been salivating to do it. This is such a disgusting abuse of judicial position and authority that it's enough to make you a wretch. But that's what the Democrats have done with America and the rule of law today. Joe, we can set that aside unless you, John, want to comment, but go right ahead and tell us more about your cosmological research.
Okay, like I've mentioned, this is an article, and it's very accessible, the one that's by Robert Ashford, The Helical Travel of Life. And by coincidence, he lived in the Houston area. And so I contacted him and said, you know, I'm really interested in your research. I'd like to meet you for lunch. And he said, well, can I bring a friend of mine along? And I went, sure. So we met for Indian buffet, and I think it was about 2013, 2012, something like that. And his friend was Dr. Pierre Latour, PhD in chemical engineering with honors from Tulane. He was ROTC all through high school and through college. And when he got his PhD, he was made a major in the U.S. Army, and he was appointed to be head of the ballistics department for the Apollo program for 2 years to finish out his ROTC service. So bottom line, the guy is really sharp. He's operated several companies, has a dozen patents, had sold two companies that had 80 employees at the time that he sold them. Really a great guy. And he had just made a presentation, or a few years later, he made a presentation at the Electric Universe 2014 convention in Albuquerque. And his was on the carbon dioxide is not the thermostat for the planet. But two of the other speakers was Dr. Pierre Corbin, who's a brother of Jeremy Corbyn in UK, who's an astrophysicist that actually is a correct astrophysicist. There's some of them out there. And then the other one was the head of radiology at Ohio State University. And his name is Dr. Pierre Rotiblet. And he had done experiments. He's trying to improve the resolution on MRIs, and they got down to the point where an MRI could not do any further. You can't use optical. You have to use like the electron microscope. You're able to see a lot of things that you can't see because of the wavelength of light. And so they were trying to get the digital fuzz, the pixelization of their images, and they couldn't resolve it with the known formulas. So he said, there must be something wrong with the formulas. So he went back and reran Planck's experiments, and turns out that Planck, in order to come up with the Planck constant and to come up with the Planck's curve and Planck's law, he had to put carbon samples inside everything that he tested. So everything was tainted with carbon, and what it meant is that everything that he did was based on black body radiation, and since the Earth is not black body radiation, it doesn't apply. And since human beings are not black body radiation, it doesn't apply. The curious thing was that human blood has 500 parts per million of carbon dioxide. We're breathing in 400 parts per million, but if you don't maintain pretty close to 500 parts per million, and you can go as many as 8,000 parts per million for 9 months in a U.S. nuclear submarine with no biological impact. But if you drop less or more than 500 parts in your own blood, you get hyper or hypocapnia, which can be a serious problem. You can go into asphyxia. So bottom line is, he needed to find out what this carbon dioxide was doing in your blood that was interfering with his signals from the MRI. And when he retested it and came up with the proper curves, and then he realized that this means that all of the fundamental laws of radiation physics are absolutely incorrect because they have coefficients that are assumed that can't exist. And so he did a great presentation at the Electric Universe in 2014 called On the Validity of Kirchhoff, because this affects not only Planck's law, but Kirchhoff's law, Stefan's law, Boltzmann's law, and Wien's law. And so bottom line is, I've been studying this guy now for over a decade. He's going to be in Austin speaking on the weekend of the eclipse, and I'm going to be there live for the eclipse on Monday, April 8th. So if we can schedule me for a program there, we can do a live remote from Austin during the time that the eclipse is happening. But his presentation is going to be on Sunday, and I'll be able to have like 4 or 5 hours listening to what his current research is. But the guy's an absolute genius, and he's got a whole bunch. He's got a site called Sky Scholar, and I'll put a link to his YouTube site. But he's dozens and dozens of videos on Big Bang, on metallic hydrogen and the sun not being total hydrogen gas, that it's metal. Absolutely wonderful research that's all, if you bother to do the research on it, it's all very defensible.
Joe, this is all sensational. Now, it cannot have escaped your notice that there's a lot of hysteria related to the forthcoming eclipse, which is a perfectly predictable routine astronomical event. So why is there all this talk? The claim is government is telling people to pack in medicine, food for some sort of catastrophe, but obviously there would only be using the eclipse as a time for whatever they're planning, not the cause. I mean, the whole thing is bizarre.
Yes, well, the eclipse path in Texas is going to go from Laredo to Texarkana, and it'll be about a 50, 60-mile path. And they're doing the same thing to us that the ancient priests used to do. Once they figured out what astronomy was, they could gather all the people into the square, and they could say, we're going to make our magic god make the sun disappear. And all the people would go, oh, the sun disappeared. And then they could do the same thing with the lunar eclipses. So once and it didn't matter whether it was the Mayans or the Egyptians or the Greeks or whoever it was that figured out how to do astronomy, they could drag the people in and say, our god is so powerful, it's going to make the sun go out. And we're the same mental abuse that we're dealing with from this priest class forever, and it's got to stop.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm familiar with this eclipse thing that's coming up. I've been doing prophetic stuff with a guy for over a year and a half now, I think. We've been doing all the gematria on certain things that I've seen out there. But isn't it correct that it's going to travel through about 6 or 7 different cities, all with the similar name of Nineveh? I don't know if you knew that or not. If you look at the path, there's actual several cities, about 6, 7 of them, through those states, and they have the same name allegedly in those several states. Novena or Nevena or something like that. And that ties in exactly with what you guys were just saying about, they're going to prove that their God's more powerful and they're going to have a big deal. And it happens to crisscross the same place the last eclipse went through in those areas, right around the Texas area as well.
Joe, go ahead. What more you want to say? Because John's got a lot of stuff he wants to talk about. Is a little less theoretical, mathematical, more down to earth.
How about mining of helium on the planets?
His Before we get there, John believes there are bases on moon. I don't believe we've ever even gone to the moon. I don't understand what benefit there would be from having bases on the moon. I can't imagine how they could possibly have been constructed if we could have gone to the moon. So I'm rather intrigued by John's stance on this. I mean, he's a intelligent guy. He's got an extensive background, and here he's holding a view, advancing it sincerely, that I think is just bananas. So, John, give us your thoughts.
Well, I just sent you the link. You're familiar with Linda Moulton Howe, and I've been in touch with Art Bell since '95, way back then. And I've interviewed people and talked to people like Colonel Philip J. Corso and things like that over the years. But this is all at a personal level where I'm doing research and things. But every time I come up with something, I've always got somebody I could bounce off certain questions to, a DARPA contact. And I'm familiar with these projects, you know, like the 20 year and back. I'm familiar with the recent whistleblower information that came out of Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. I think it was Buzz Aldrin, where they were telling this one person not to disclose the information about the bases on the moon and what they saw and the structures and all that, because it was a top secret type of a development that nobody was going to talk about. And a lot of these guys are dying off. And before they die, they're admitting there are structures on the moon, the dark side, the aliens were there, and they've got bases on Mars. And I go, okay, I get that.
Do you know the temperature on the dark side of the moon, John, is like 350 degrees below Fahrenheit? Do you have any idea how absurd it is to have an idea of bases on the far side of the moon?
Well, that's why they have them underground.
I don't give a darn.
Oh, wait. Gale Crater was mentioned just last night. So G-A-L-E, Gale Crater, people can Google it, and they've got pictures and diagrams and stuff there, but let's go back to Valiant Thor, who's from Venus, who allegedly visited Washington in the 50s when Eisenhower was president, and I'm familiar with that meeting. And also Nixon was privy to the information. The surface temperature of Venus is 114 degrees. Are you kidding? I worked in the desert where it was 114 degrees in Calexico on a routine basis in the desert in the summer. But it's like they live underground. Just like they have underground people live up at the North Pole. That was confirmed by Richard Byrd. I get the Byrds mixed up, the Admiral, missing time and so forth. So the Antarctic, the base is down there. Even Obama took people down there, and that's where, I guess, Buzz Aldrin, was it Buzz? Or I get Neil and Buzz mixed up. He had a panic attack from what he saw. So there's a lot of information going on. And then, of course, I'm getting my own context telling me stuff, too. But I'd like to hear what Joe has to say about it also.
Well, I wrote an article at Principia Scientific called Perplexing Apollo Questions for NASA, where I used their actual Saturn V rockets with the fuel burn and the amount of velocity and altitude that they got, and proved that it was impossible for them to even escape Earth orbit with what the Saturn V had to offer. Elon Musk, in order to do his Starship, is going to have 25% greater lift than the Saturn V. He's going to send 8 missions to the Lagrange point where there's equal gravity between Earth and the moon, and pre-position 1,200 tons of fuel in order to hopefully make it there to get enough fuel to not overshoot the moon, land on the moon, get off of the moon, get back to the Lagrange point, and get enough fuel to be able to come back to Earth so you don't overshoot the Earth, because you can't use parachutes on the moon. You have to use retro rockets. And when you have Earth's gravity sucking you back from the moon, you're going to be having increasing speed that the only thing you can do is retro rockets to slow it back down. So if you have to have 1,200 tons of pre-positioned fuel to make a lunar round trip with Musk technology today, you damn sure didn't do it in 1969. And I go into the regolith on the moon, where the lunar temperature is 40 degrees Kelvin on both poles, and that the temperature underneath the surface of the moon, even in broad daylight at the equator, is 40 degrees Kelvin, because the moon works like a refractory oven in a forge, where you can have 3,000 degree hot melting steel, and you have just a wall of brick that's only a foot thick, and you can stand with your hand on that wall and it won't hurt you because it reaches the radiative equilibrium. And the same thing happens on the moon. The regolith on the moon only penetrates down to 0.4 meters. Below that, it's constant temperature, and that constant temperature is cold as shit. So bottom line, yeah, it's 260 degrees during the full moon daylight, and it gets minus 315 degrees Fahrenheit during the new moon nighttime on the moon.
So, Joe, I take it you're agreeing with me. The idea of bases on the moon is ludicrous. It's impossible. Even if we could travel to the moon, you couldn't build bases on the moon. John, I don't know what to say here, but I think...
That's okay. Do you agree that the moon is a artificial satellite?
No, God, no.
How about the Van Allen belt? Let's ask Joe about the Van Allen belt, because people use that as the first excuse about not going to the moon. I go, okay, I hear you. But what about the alien technology? Excluding what Elon Musk can spend trillions of dollars on rocket fuel, get to the area of alien technology, then it cancels out all the other stuff that we're talking about. See what I mean?
I'm not sure it does. It doesn't change the temperature of the interior of the moon, for example, John. I mean, honest to God, some of this stuff is wacky.
No, I know, but it's been proven that it was hollow, too.
It is not hollow. That's also loopy. Do you understand the mass of the moon? If it were a hollow, it would have a completely different orbit in terms of elementary physics. That's why the theories about the hollow Earth are equally absurd.
Well, I guess they sent a rocket up there.
Elementary physics. This is elementary physics, John.
I know, but they had a rocket that went
to the moon. And expect it to have the same physics, because the mass is completely different.
You missed the part about the rocket that allegedly was sent to the moon, where they pinged it, allegedly with a small nuke, so they could get the reverberation and measure it.
You're being given a load of shit, I got to tell you.
Well, I want to ask what Joe says about it.
I'll give you a chance. In relation to Joe's point about assessing the Saturn rocket's lift, Russian scientists did that. You go back and you look at my debunking of the moon landing on my jameshfetzer.org, you know, the moon landing, how we know we didn't go. And I include a report from Russian physicists who made the calculation that with that amount of thrust, it was impossible to escape low Earth orbit. And that's where we stood. We did not go to the moon then, and I dare say we have never gone to the moon. And the whole idea, I think, is fruity of having bases on the moon. I'm sorry to be so strong in opposition on this, John. I hold you in the highest esteem.
That's okay. That's all right. I talk to people from all kinds of opinions on it.
Oh, I know. Good, Joe. Go ahead, Joe. Then we'll go back to John.
Yes, I attended the Secret Space Conference in Bastrop, Texas, in October of 2014, and the speakers included Linda Moulton Howe, who I sat next to during lunch, Catherine Austin Fitz, who I talked to numerous times, John from PhD, the nuclear destruction of Mars, and John B. Wells, who's talk host with Caravan to Midnight.
I know,
so,
John.
I'll tell you with that. The Chinese, with greater technology than NASA had, managed to get one of their robots. It's hard to even land a robot on the moon without it falling over, as India and as Japan, and as the European Space Agency. And then it's really hard to be able to get one to come back. The Chinese, in December of 2020, returned their Chang, C-H-A-N-G-E-7 satellite with 2 kilos of lunar material. 2 kilos is 4.5 pounds, and you would have more than 4.5 pounds of poop and Pampers if we had astronauts up there. And I've seen the Apollo capsule at the National Air and Space Museum, the command module. It's the size of my minivan, and the idea that you had 3 guys hopping around in there with suitcases on their backs is absolutely ridiculous. There was no loading docks on the lander or on the command module, and there was no airlocks, which means every time you open the door, all the air that was supposedly in there was going to go back out in space, and then you'd have to re-air. The whole thing's completely absurd.
completely ludicrous, indefensible, a scientific fantasy that is an absurdity from the point of view of physics, just outrageous. Now, John, go ahead and lay out whatever you want as a rebuttal.
Oh, well, that's a good comment, because I used to tell people that they would just shock them, and I said, wait a minute, you remember the landing that they showed on the moon in 69? I was in Japan at the time. And I go, yeah, who was the photographer that was
taking the picture? Right, you set up the camera. Yeah,
it just blows everybody's mind. They go, what? I said, well, yeah, you have to think about that. Either that or they sent a photographer or an artificial satellite machine or a lander. They landed next to it to take the photos of the landing. So I go, okay, that's cool too. So I play both sides. It doesn't matter. I'll listen to all the facts and reason it out. But then again, you go outside the bubble, and I ask other questions outside the bubble where people can't get it. But I got this DARPA contact I run this stuff by all the time. And I say, well, what about this? What about that? Well, if you keep thinking at the level of human transportation, it won't work. When you get into alien technology, it's totally different. And I was just watching Linda Moulton Howe. I've talked to her before. I've done interviews with John B. Wells and a bunch of other people that Joe had also mentioned at these facilities. I don't go to these events, of course, but I do know people from way back. In fact, when I was at FLETC, Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, back in the time I was with Customs in 84, they had moon rocks on display there. And I go, oh, yeah, those are the infamous moon rocks. They're kind of gray quartz-looking, very unusual rocks. I've never seen them. But they actually had some on display, and they were giving samples to Clinton and a bunch of other people back in time where they were having these things going around. So they're still playing it up. You see what I mean? They're playing up the facade about this. If they didn't go to the moon, but they're still projecting this. Even Nixon had a special speech that if they didn't land on the moon or if they got killed in the procedure, he was ready with a speech to tell the nation about the negative aspects of what happened. Then he also had a congratulatory speech, which he's actually filmed. I've got a picture of it. I'd have to send you the picture where he's looking at these astronauts in seclusion under quarantine after they got back. So it's like, okay, well, they're playing it up. But that's to cover up the alien technology, in my opinion. Joe? Jim?
Okay, well, I was also interviewed by John B. Wells in April of 2015, a month after I was interviewed by George Norrie on Coast to Coast, and a month by Miller and on his program, and also by James Spetzer. So, yeah, I'm very familiar. And I've seen John B. Wells at several other different events. But bottom line is, yeah, the Van Allen belt that you mentioned, I was doing a lot of travel nationwide in the 80s when they first started putting metal detectors at the airport, and they recommended that you take all of your film out of your camera so that it wouldn't get exposed to the radiation that they were using for metal detectors at that particular time. And in order to do that with the supposedly Hasselblad film that they used when they went to the moon, you would have to have that similar type of protection. The radiation barrier would be greater than what you have to do for dental x-rays, and it's from the estimates I've read, it would take like 1.5-2 inches of lead completely around any living system and any film that you wanted to send through the Van Allen belt to avoid the radiation exposure there. But once you get outside the belt, it's concentrated because of Earth's magnetic field. But once you get outside of there, you got no protection from the cosmic rays and the electromagnetic radiation from the sun while you're on the moon, unless you're on the dark side of the moon, where it's pretty damn cold. So bottom line is, the whole thing's absolutely preposterous.
Yeah, I am interested, John, in the Antarctic basis.
I wanted to mention about the
X-rays. I would like you to elaborate on that, because I think that is much more plausible. I'm not buying into it as yet, but I've always been curious. You're even saying Obama took people down there to visit the facility. What the hell is going on there?
Yeah. Well, I was going to mention that I worked at the White House, and I used an X-ray machine when we had briefcases with a single document brought in from Langley, you know, a daily brief. And we used a certain amount of radiation, of course, on that machine, which is not the same as Joe was explaining, like less radiation than it would take if you went out in the sunlight or if you were flying at 30,000 feet in an aircraft or if you had dental X-rays and so forth. And we also had them at the border, and I even suggested these radiation detection devices when I was at the border with U.S. Customs in 83 to 98, and they came up with those. But those were so sensitive that they could detect bananas. Bananas would set them off. And so that's a lot of potassium, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff with the radiation stuff. That's a common thing about Antarctica. The Germans during World War II specifically cut off a special section of that, which was top secret, and you couldn't go near it. That was during Adolf's time, Uncle Adolf. And, of course, he escaped the bunker and went to Bariloche in Argentina, where he lived out the rest of his life there. But forever, they've always had this place excluded. I would have to reference that movie with The Thing, with the original movie, The Thing, and then Kurt Russell, the follow-up movie, if you guys remember that one.
I know the first one.
1951. Everything was in 51.
Yeah.
Eight Years Stood Still, 51. The Thing movie, 1951, Hawks movies. A lot of this stuff was tied in, which was very interesting because it was like a rage back then, back in the 50s, with these movies right after Roswell 47. So they had these things going on, and Obama supposedly took these guys down there and had invited special guests, allegedly people from the Orthodox Church and some other people, and Buzz Aldrin was there, and he had a panic attack because they had underground stuff like UFOs and dead bodies, alien bodies on ice and stuff like that. But forever, you still can't traipse around or trespass over in the area where the German area is. And all the major countries have sections like we do, Norway, and a bunch of other countries like Germany and so forth. So it's like super restricted. You have to ask the question, well, why is this so damn restricted? Well, they're doing top secret type experiments. But you remember Admiral Byrd went to the North Pole. That's a fact. He also went and got his butt kicked when he went down to Antarctica later. But yet they're still covering that stuff up.
And what does that mean that he got his butt kicked?
Well, when they went down there after he already visited the North Pole, he allegedly met with aliens underground. 4 hours of fuel was not missing when he was there for 4 hours, which means they used some sort of a tractor beam thing, a la Star Trek or not. Then he got released, went back. He still had 4 hours of fuel to fly back to his destination in North America locations. And then later went to Antarctica, where allegedly the saucers, some German markings, attacked him and his ships, and people got killed. But that supposedly was covered under a top secret disclosure restriction. But you could find it. There's a book about it. I've seen books, and they've got all kinds of videos about it. But I don't know if Joe's aware of it. Maybe he might be able to, you know, enlighten us on his knowledge. There
are books about ghosts and goblins, John, so that there are books per se isn't impressive. Joe, what do you know about Antarctic bases and alien technology?
Well, I kind of put that in the science fiction category to do for amusement purposes only at this point. There's the potential that it could happen, but getting back to the real physics, I found the actual citation for what I've been mentioning about. This is an article that was published in Journal of Geophysical Research, April of 2012. The title is Lunar Equatorial Surface Temperature in Regolith Profile by Vans Veda. And what it says is that the temperature is constant below 0.4 meters because you reach the equilibrium between albedo and emissivity. And so basically, you've reached a radiation equilibrium, and that's why it's the constant of below 0.4 meters. And 0.4 meters is like, you know, 18 inches. And so bottom line is, yeah, if you want to put a base on the moon, not only do you have to provide drone food and water and air, but you also have to be able to provide for it being super damn hot during the full moon cycle and being super damn cold during the new moon cycle. So it's pretty prohibitive, and there's not a spot on the moon where you have even better than that in the way of conditions, because both poles have ice caps that are wind-blown water vapor from Earth that's accreted over the last 4 billion years on both poles, where there's never any direct sunlight, and so it's not subject to evaporation. So there's water on both poles of the moon, but there's no source for that water other than being blown off the face of the Earth. And the strange thing is, we're dealing with these stupid climate clowns, and they seem to think that everything in the universe has been constant, and they go through all this gymnastics about things during the Jurassic period. Well, during the Jurassic period, we had dragonflies that had a wingspan of 24 inches. The biggest dragonfly now has a wingspan of 11 inches. We had pterodactyls with a wingspan of 38 feet. The biggest wingspan of anything now is the Peruvian condor with a 16-foot wingspan. So bottom line is, there again, you get back to the function of lift is a function of area, which is a function of a square. And so if you have 4 times the amount of lift in order to be able to have twice as much wingspan, then that means that there was 4 times as much air. So that the amount of air that was on the planet. So bottom line is, the atmosphere is constantly being generated as a result of nuclear fission, where these elemental atoms are produced and exhaled out of the planet. But it's being constantly eroded by a number of different things, including solar wind blowing it off the top of the atmosphere, and photolysis, which is actually changing the molecules in the air. In the same way that you get carbon-14, you get nitrogen-14 that's hit by cosmic rays, and it knocks a couple of the protons out of the nitrogen molecule, creating a carbon-14 molecule. Same number of neutrons, but you've got one less proton. And that particular erosion process has been ongoing for 4 billion years. So to be able to extrapolate past climate from today's conditions is absolutely absurd. The reason you had ferns that were 30 feet tall and lizards that were the size of buses is because you had 4 times as much air. And that's why the lung capacity of dinosaurs is significantly less than the lung capacity for similar body size masses today. Everything makes sense if you understand how everything has changed, and it's changed enormously, and you have nobody in the science community that addresses any of these other vectors as far as what's happened in reality. It's absolutely absurd that we have this level of indoctrination with no voices speaking in opposition. It's absolutely crazy.
I think that's a masterful critique, Joe. I'm very impressed. Love it. You know, I'd open the phone lines if I thought it would elevate the level of discussion, but it's a hazard. John, yes, you know, give us your thoughts, John.
Oh, I was just answering a call from my DARPA guy. I'll have to call him back and ask him some questions. But I worked at the border for 15 years and sucked up carbon monoxide, not just carbon dioxide, and I got 0.02 CO1. If I say it right, in my system, because the doctors didn't take the blood test right away, and I was on injury leave for like 8 or 9 months because of it. Carbon monoxide, which is a poison, is very severe. But you can imagine, if they're trying to terraform, if that's the term, the planet into a more carbon dioxide, you kind of wonder what kind of aliens they want here in the first place, or what are they trying to do, is kill off the human population. Which I keep getting repeated messages is, yeah, they want to kill off 5 to 7 billion on the planet. And now they're coming up with, yeah, they could have another, an alleged solar flare, which would burn us out. And all the people like Billy Gates, who has an underground military base up in North Dakota, will survive. Not to mention the continuity of government, COG, that gets into the Secret Service stuff. Why Obama and the Clintons are buying special land over New Zealand or Australia, and that place looks in particular like the best target, because that's where they're practicing all the shutdowns, is in Australia. you know, the COVID lie. Joe?
Well, they're going to die. They're going to die like the rest of us, for God's sake. Dick Cheney's going to die. Hillary Clinton's going to die. Bill Clinton's going to die. Bill Gates is going to die. It just won't happen soon enough.
Dick Cheney's got a unlimited supply of heart transfers, you know?
Yeah, I know. I'm certain he does. He's replaced his whole body with parts.
He likes Marines. That's a fact, Jim. I forgot that I said it like that, but he was supposedly up in Oceanside, and he was talking to these young guys. He says, hey, do you smoke? Do you drink? Yeah. Where are you stationed at? What's your specialty, private? And these guys were just so enthralled with talking to the former defense guy, Dick Cheney or whatever, and they're putting him on his list. So if he runs out of hearts, he's got a list.
I believe it. I believe it 100%, John.
Well, hopefully he gets a heart that's been fully jabbed and boosted, so he gets some of the mRNA that they've been...
Yeah, that would be devoutly wished. I'm going to open the line 608-957-8727, 608-957-8727. I have a pretty good idea who we're going to hear from. So, okay.
Call if you dare.
608-957-8727. If someone wants to join in, we have a wild range of discussion topics today. Highly unusual. Not likely to occur anytime soon. So if you want to weigh in on aliens, bases on the moon, and the whole bit, here's your chance. Not to mention a rotating universe and time travel and all that. Joe, I thought it was very important you point out. This time travel doesn't mean you can alter history. It just means you could see events in time because their record is there in it's like using the Wayback Machine, really.
Well, Operation Looking Glass and Stargates. Just to throw a few terms out, if you're familiar with those. Even Trump supposedly had some access to the alleged mirror, the looking glass operation, where they can go back and look at incidents in time. The famous one was the alleged crucifixion of Christ, quote, where they supposedly saw it and watched it, that type of thing. That's pretty amazing.
Well, supposedly the stuff I've read that they were able to go back and watch the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and then there's a group called the Good Guys Club, which meets in New York, where if you reach $1 billion in net worth, you can join the Good Guys Club, and your funds are put in the starts with a C, the one that's operated by the Bushes, but it's a secret fund where you get a 25% return on your investment, and because you're, quote, at that point a charitable organization, you pay 0% in taxes, and you can take out 10% of your principal every year. So your bottom line is you're making 15% every year and living tax-free. And this includes Ted Turner and supposedly people that have been there. They have holographic projection, and they can, like, take you back to your birthday party when you were in elementary school and show you where you were in the past.
To prove it. And that's dollars on the membership?
But that's getting to the point of being speculation. What I wanted to get back to is actual science. I sent you a 3-minute-long clip this morning of Paul Harvey in an interview or a presentation he made in 1992 about the Montreal Protocol and the ozone hole. Well, where does the ozone hole come from? Well, where does ozone come from? You have a thing called photolysis, where you have diatomic oxygen molecules where the two oxygens are connected. When they get a certain frequency, which happens to be 256 microns of ultraviolet radiation, the oxygens break apart, but they don't like being apart because they've got an electron shell that wants them to combine with something. So some of the oxygens combine with other oxygen, forming ozone, which has a half-life in the atmosphere of about 1 hour. So it's constantly being generated and removed. But then if you have situations like Antarctica, where in the wintertime, our winter, their summer, they get no sunlight. So bottom line is that you would not be generating ozone. The other thing that's produced is nitrogen oxide, And that is nitrogen O2. And it, they're claiming that that is an environmental pollutant because it catches Earth's outgoing long-wave radiation and focuses it back on the Earth. And that's why we have to get rid of nitrogen fertilizers, because it releases nitrous oxide, which is ridiculous. It's 0.33 parts per million in the atmosphere. The bands it absorbs in are absolutely minor. And I've done this presentation with Fetzer on previous discussions about global warming, but you have a thing called Wien's Law, which states that for every discrete absorption band, it correlates to a temperature. So, for instance, on CO2, you have 2.7 micron. That corresponds with 800 degrees centigrade, which means it can only absorb incoming sunlight energy. There's no 800 degrees centigrade outgoing long-wave radiation from the Earth. The same thing with the 4.3 micron band, which is 400 degrees centigrade. And the only one where carbon dioxide can absorb is in the 14.7 micron, which is minus 80, which is why the thermosphere is over 50% carbon dioxide with a specific gravity of 1.5, which it should not, because of gravity, shouldn't be there, number one. But it's held up there because it's absorbing both incoming from the sun and outgoing from the Earth. And so bottom line is, you know, I've studied this stuff better than any climatologist or meteorologist or radiation physicist that you've ever met. And I'd be happy to debate anyone that's qualified to debate it, but nobody will debate you because the debates are all 100% rigged.
Hey, Joe, let me ask you a question about helium for a second, because it came up on one of these lectures. In fact, Linda Moulton Howe, I looked at a video just last night, and somebody sent it to me. It was a recent disclosure whistleblower thing. Something about people or aliens mining helium. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I thought helium was a gas. Where would you mine helium?
Well, helium comes out of the Earth in natural gas wells. And there's the large one up in Amarillo. But the original discoveries were in, I believe, Wichita, Kansas. And now they've just discovered another field up in Minnesota. But it's an inert gas. And when I took chemistry, the period 8 elements on the far right-hand side of the chart were called inert because they have a balanced number of electrons in their outer shell, and they do not form compounds. So you have a whole series of elements that are on that side of the periodic table that can only come from fission, and that includes argon, helium, kryptonite. And the funny thing is radon. Well, radon is a radioactive gas with a 3.8-day half-life, which means how in the hell do you have radon unless you've got an enormous amount of fission going on in the center of the Earth, which is why the center of the Earth has an estimated 10,000 degree Fahrenheit temperature, because it's an enormous amount of energy in fission. It's a million times the generated energy from a chemical reaction, which is why nuclear bombs are measured in megatons per reactant as opposed to megatons of TNT, because that's what the extrapolation is for it. So it's absolutely crazy. But bottom line is helium is being produced. It's got a specific gravity. I think I've got it written down, but specific gravity for helium and hydrogen is really light. I think hydrogen's like zero. Boy, I wish I was known that this is where we were going, because I've got plenty of notes, but I just don't have the notes.
But it's naturally occurring in nature is the question.
Sir?
It's naturally occurring in nature.
Yes, and it's being generated constantly, but it's got a specific gravity. I believe in the case of helium, it's wish I could find it quicker than this.
But what about iridium and the other radioactive isotopes? But iridium keeps coming up.
In other words,
there's a half-life to it, or can it be used without fusion?
Yeah, I'm not looking at my periodic chart at this moment, so I'm just going from memory.
I was just curious if you knew of it off the top of your head, because it was just some other stuff I was researching about the Manhattan Project recently, and I was looking at that stuff. I said, yeah, there's certain radioactive materials that only have a half-life of so many minutes, or the same stuff Bob Lazar was talking about, which was what, is it 235 or 115 polonium or plutonium or whatever it was that they were using in these craft up at Area 51. But some of it was so unstable is the word. It was so unstable unless they did certain procedures to it. But I might be talking up my outside my field too. You know what I mean? So
you get like a up to a 4-magnitude increase in atomic bomb when you can add fusion to the fission reaction. Mm-hmm. And the initial hydrogen bomb was made with deuterium, which is a hydrogen which has an extra hydrogen molecule. But its concentration is like 1 in a million in normal water. So it's really difficult to be able to get enough of that out of water to be able to have that as a hydrogen source. But what the Teller-Ulam law was that if you put another element in there, lithium, which is, I believe, atomic number 4 or something, or 6, carbon 6. But anyhow, if you put lithium in there, what happens is as the lithium is being fissioned, it fissions into hydrogen, and that hydrogen is what you use to make the hydrogen bomb. And so you could take a regular plutonium or uranium nuclear bomb that had a 1 kiloton, and you could do a 4-fold increase in that in a 1,000 kilotons by adding the hydrogen source, which comes from using the fission of lithium to create hydrogen right at the point of impact. And that hydrogen is then fused, and that fusion energy is the same fusion energy that powers the sun ostensibly. So bottom line is I love discussing all this stuff. Never know which way the conversation's going to go. And I don't actually have all of my because this is extemporaneous, and I don't have the notes to know
of
exactly where the conversation
is. Of course. Let's see, we had one more story there. Big Bang and microwave background, the early years. Would you like to address that, Joe?
Yes, that's a 6-minute long, and we got enough time. If you could play it, then that would absolutely...
I don't have it set up to be played. I only have the image of the... If you wanted to play it, if you can play it, it's okay with me.
I can't play it unless I just play it on my tablet, and that's not going to be...
Right.
But we'll put that in the show notes. It's posted, people will be able to watch. That's Dr. Pierre Rutublin, again, from Ohio State University. But he didn't want to get involved in the global warming situation. And I talked to him on the phone a number of different times and had dozens of emails back to him. But he said that that's absolutely a toxic subject for anybody that's in college research. And so he said, even though everything I've done proves that carbon dioxide can't possibly warm the planet, he said, I can't make any public statements and will not make any public statements about it. You can read my own material and draw your own conclusions.
Joe, this is so bad. It's like every civil, mechanical, and structural engineer knew that the Twin Towers could not have collapsed and kept their mouths shut. It's just outrageous to me.
Yeah, so I wrote a great article about that called The Cargo Cult Phenomena at Principia Scientific, where that's exactly what we're dealing with. These people are so programmed that they're not allowed to even discuss anything else, much less think about it or have an intelligent debate. So that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a completely captured educational system, a government enforcement situation, and a news media situation where you can't make an intelligent discussion with anybody because they don't have the background information to be able to discuss it with you intelligently, number one. And number two, they've been programmed to not believe anything that's outside of their little fishbowl. One of the great sayings from back in the 60s was, we don't know who discovered water, but we're pretty sure it wasn't the fish. And that's what we've been trying to do with Revolution Radio and all of our hundreds of discussions on BitChute. Dr. Fetzer and I go back a long way. I think we've got 350 of BitChute now. But my plan is we're trying to get out of your fishbowl so you can look back at the other fish and go, damn, those fish are really dumb. I wish they'd get out of the fishbowl. And so hopefully that moment's going to happen. And when it does, I think it'll happen pretty quickly. I think there'll be like an almost instantaneous awareness of everything that we've been bullshitted about. And then there'll be a place for people that have been correct voices for a long time to be able to elevate it to the point where we can carry on a dialogue with intelligent, empirical-based data.
Well, it's just a joy to have you back on talking about these subjects, Joe. You're so masterful. I love it. John, you have some final thoughts for today?
Yeah, I was just looking up that video, nuclear explosion power comparison. If you Google it or put it up on a YouTube, it's like 3 or 4 minutes. And it compares what TNT is at 1 kilogram, and it goes all the way up to the Tsar Bomba. If I remember, I saw it like years ago, and on occasion I'll go back and look at it. But, I want to contact Joe off the air and have some interesting discussions, because you guys have a much bigger background with this stuff on talking at certain levels than I've had experience with, but I do research it. This stuff is pretty amazing when you compare with what they're doing with the electromagnetic fields, the lasers, and all this stuff, talking about bombs and technology for wars and stuff. And then,
John, let me just interject. Can you say more about Obama taking people down to the Antarctic? I mean, that just is astonishing to me. Can you elaborate on that at all? What was he showing them there?
I'll have to pull something up and send it to you. But supposedly he took people down there, religious leaders. And I keep remembering he had some Orthodox I don't know if they were Russian Orthodox, Russian priests or whatever they were, but he did have a lot of people, including Buzz Aldrin, who had a panic attack based on something he saw. And I guess he was so shocked about what he saw, allegedly alien bodies and maybe even a flying saucer or two, you know, that kind of stuff. So I go, okay, I get it. And other people have confirmed the same stuff as well. But it's like once you become president or ex-presidents, they still get briefings. These guys still get these top secret briefings no matter what, because if something happens to one president or the current president, that means the former president will be able to slip in there or help out. And if they get rid of all the ex-presidents, there won't be anybody left with all the current briefings, unless they're military.
Dick Cheney.
Oh, my
God.
He'll
be there forever. He's going to live 300 years. Joe, the Antarctic. What do you have thoughts about it?
Oh, well, I was finishing up on the thoughts on the nuclear bomb.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Little boy at Hiroshima and fat man at Nagasaki. Both of those bombs were 15 kiloton. Hiroshima was uranium. Nagasaki was plutonium. But they weighed like 9 tons, and they were like 10 feet long or 8 feet in diameter. They were absolutely as much as a B-29 could carry in a single bomb load. And so by 1950, the United States had been able to miniaturize artillery shells for our Iowa-class battleships, 16-inch artillery shells that were 15 kiloton. So that gives you an idea of what was capable in just a 5-year period between World War II and 1950, that we were able to miniaturize atomic bombs to that particular level. And so that means that you could also make probably a hand grenade-sized bomb big enough to blow up the World Trade Center buildings if you did that same extrapolation factor. But bottom line is, we've invested an enormous amount of energy into destroying life on this planet, and we're not investing anything on making life better.
What a great point. What a great point, Joe. If we'd taken a fraction of that, we could have elevated the standard of living of every American. We could have eradicated poverty. We could have had sophisticated, well-educated young people. We've done none of that. None of that. And now we're bringing in all these illegals and giving them a free ride and a red car, but no American is experiencing. It is a disgrace. John, your thoughts.
Yeah, I was trying to go back and compare some of the bombs. I don't even know how to explain non-nillion tons of nuclear explosive material more than Hiroshima. I'm not a scientist or a mathematician, but non-nillion, I think that's like over a couple of trillion. That's how big this one bomb is. I was looking it up on that video I sent on the link. You'll have to check it out. It was the most informative thing where they explain all the sizes of these bombs. The nuclear ability to just, it would destroy the whole Earth. And even when they destroyed the dinosaurs with the asteroid, 65 million years ago or whatever it was, then that was enough just in one area to blot out everything so that they couldn't get sunlight and then they couldn't eat the plants and the foods and everything. So.
Yeah, let me ask Joe, here we go. I want to talk about the extinction of the dinosaurs. Of course, oil is not a fossil fuel. What a myth. John, you were wonderful. Joe, spectacular. What a great discussion today. I can't wait to do it again. Meanwhile, everyone out there, spend as much time as you can with your family, your friends, the people you love and care about, because we do not know how much time we have left. Maybe we can. Back on Monday.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You